So this is From Surviving the Living, the Spotlight Edition, and I am here with Sarah. And why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and where you're from?
So I'm Sarah Michelson. I grew up in Wisconsin, moved to Minnesota. Here we are. I came with my kids. I came for my husband. We eventually got married 3 years ago, been together almost 9 years. He is my third husband, and life is funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's so many things that happen. We try to live this life of this worldview of, oh, if things aren't perfect, then I can make them perfect, and I must be with the wrong person, and I must be doing the wrong things. And we're always in this level of imperfection, and that's where I found myself. Yeah. I tried being the perfect mom. I tried being the perfect wife. Oh, it can't possibly be me, so it must be my husband. All of these lies. We're always chasing these lies. Yeah. My dad was a pastor my whole entire life. He was also a boiler inspector. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. Growing up, you don't know any different, right? Mm-hmm. And growing up, I'm realizing that my mom was probably borderline, definitely had narcissistic traits and tendencies and features. Maybe my dad was a dismissive avoidant attachment style. Where is my identity? So you try to be good with like perfectionism, and you try to be a good girl, and you try to go to church, and you try to live up to this. Oh my goodness, and you make a mistake, then you make a definitely moral and value mistake, and then you keep trading your authenticity for the world.
Mm-hmm.
And for acceptance and all of these things. And so there's just this thing inside of you that is always waging. Now I can identify it as spiritual warfare in my world. And then I came upon, my husband and I were going through some really hard things, some betrayal issues this past year. And you just have all these divine moments. You can look back at your life. Right. And I noticed these mile markers, and it's just, oh, there you were.
Yeah.
And this YouTube video popped up, and it was about integrated attachment theory by Thais Gibson with Personal Development School. And finally, there was an answer. I'm like, no wonder I act this way.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there is something that I can work on. Not that there's something wrong with me, but something that I can work on. So that's what kind of brought me here, pursuing a certification to become an integrated attachment theory coach through Thais Gibson's Gibson Integrated Attachment Theory courses. And I am just learning all kinds of stuff about borderline. I'm learning all kinds of stuff about narcissistic abuse because I am a victim of that.
You talk about growing up in feeling that you needed to be perfect, or that if you were authentic, then maybe you weren't going to find answers or be received in a way that your family wasn't going to accept it and provide you answers, maybe in a church setting. And so what did that feel like?
I always felt unsettled. So what happens was, when you're not accepted for who you really are, your authentic you as a child, you know, when this attachment forms, it starts from 0 to 2 is when your attachment style is formed.
Yeah.
And then it's reinforced from 2 to 8. So when your authentic place in the world, how you show up in the world is not accepted by the people that are supposed to keep you safe, that are supposed to identify with you and accept you for who you are. There is a disconnect between your brain and your body. And when that happens, I think that there's a disconnect in the spirit of your inner world.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to be somebody you're not.
Right.
And your body always, and your spirit always wants to come back to real authenticity. But every time that shows, you're disciplined for it. There's negative and positive emotions associated with, oh, okay, I can be the quiet little girl, but really inside of me, I am loud and rambunctious. Your true self is negated. Your true self is actually punished. And this fake self, which again is not authentic, is rewarded. So from a very young age, we learn to be someone we're not. You have this view, like I see it as like a mirror in my head. You have this view of who you really are, of who God really made you to be. This real place of how you can actually connect with God and with others and with yourself, and it's stolen from you. And it all has to do with our parents' core wounds. Like, what happened to them, really? So it all comes back to a place of compassion of how did they get to be the way they are? Why wouldn't they repeat what they know? And then as we're born, we have these personalities that are God-given. But if they're not appreciated, if somehow, like my mother, saw the same things in me that she had repressed and wasn't awarded for in her childhood, she learned that was bad.
Yeah.
So no, you're not going to survive this life. She was really protecting me,
sure,
right? In her own mind. And these are the same messages I gave to my children. Why wouldn't I? It's what I knew, yeah, right? And why wouldn't she? It's what she knew. We're just all muddling through this life. Last December, we were going through emotions, and one of the emotions exercises was, think about the last time that you felt X, and then think about the earliest time you felt X. And the earliest time would be pre-18. One of the words was beautiful. I have never felt beautiful since I was 15 years old, because my mother always had to be the prettier one, always had to be the more beautiful one. I related most to my dad. My beauty was where she felt threatened, and her beauty is where she found worth. So if I had more worth than her, that made her worth less, right?
Yeah.
So it was always a competition. Could be narcissistically abusive relationships is triangulation of how can I make my world better by creating chaos so nobody looks at me. So she always compared my beauty. She always compared my smarts. She always compared everything. The last time I felt beautiful was when I was 15 years old and I went to the prom with my boyfriend. Right? But all through life, I could dress up in Gucci. I could dress up in my wedding dresses. I could dress up in all of these things. I could do the best hair, the best makeup, everything. Never believed I was beautiful. And then I was telling the history of my life last August. And I was in a group of women who had suffered the same type of betrayal. And as I'm telling my story, one of the other gals' jobs is to write down and dictate little notes and then offer some positive feedback on it. And when I got to the point, I'm like, I never saw myself as beautiful. She wrote in her little note, she said, remember, classy, not trashy. Those two words changed my entire view of my everything.
Yeah.
Because suddenly, my personality was classy. It could be accepted. My physical beauty, I could find worth in something outside of my physical beauty, outside of how I treated and took care of other people. I could be kind genuinely without it being manipulative. I could finally start living my authentic self. How God created me, how he made me to be more effective for him, for his purpose, for his plan, for all of God's good.
Yeah.
He's going to use the mess of my story to create a beautiful message to identify with other people who have maybe felt the same way.
Since you've begun all of this training and the learning that you are doing, which is really helping you and will also help others through you, how has your family received the news that you're learning these things? You must be very excited. Are they excited? Are they uncertain? How do they feel?
Everybody is at their own stage of the journey, and I try to be very careful in not being like overly codependent in the way of forcing information on. 2018, my mom died. And after that, none of us knew who we were because of codependency and enmeshment. I love that I can finally put words to what I was feeling and experiencing my entire life. Our attachment theory is that you're either anxious, preoccupied, you're fearful, avoidant, you're dismissive, avoidant, or you're securely attached. And all of those attachment styles have a way of interacting in relationships no matter where you are. The relationship to yourself, the relationship to friends, relationship to spouses, relationship to acquaintances, relationships in the workplace. It's literally how you show up and relate.
It's interesting that you say relationship to self. And so let's talk a little bit about integrated attachment theory. And for the people who are watching the podcast, we have some resources which you've provided for us, and we're going to have them on the website, hollybot.me, on the Spotlights resources page. And the listeners and viewers can check those out on their own time. We also have a cheat sheet of the attachment style characteristics, and there are common patterns for each attachment style. And I was looking at these before our podcast, and I thought, I wonder which one of these I would be in relation to others, my husband and my family. And there are a little bit in each one of these things mm-hmm. that I can see myself. And then I also thought back over time.
Yes.
Because I have been a very wounded mm-hmm. and traumatized individual, maybe even I've been a very toxic individual in my past. And I have done a lot of healing over the years. And I would hope that I have improved in my ability to be good for others and good for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at the last page, which is the secure attachment, and I thought, I sure hope that stable and emotionally balanced, good at communicating, describes me at least a little. But my question for you is it possible to move from one of these more unhealthy styles to secure attachment?
Absolutely. That is the goal. That's what I coach people to do.
Not stuck. You're not born in one way and you stay.
Okay. Nope. You're born, you could be born in one way. Like I originated as anxious, preoccupied. Okay. But then as life got harder and my mom told me to get tougher and relationship connections became more toxic, more harmful. All of these connections just kept reinforcing that, relationships are not safe.
Yeah.
We move into more of an anxious preoccupied will move more into a fearful avoidant attachment style. So a brief overview. Anxious attachment is more clingy. Dismissive avoidant will be relationships are never rewarding. They are super harmful. They are super toxic. I don't need them. I can't need them because they hurt too much. I'm going to go over here and be by myself. I'm going to be like the classic introverted ideal that society has. That's not what an introvert is, but I'm going to just go be by myself. Life is too hard.
Yeah.
Fearful avoidant is a mix of the two.
Okay.
So they are going to adopt both anxious characteristics as well as dismissive characteristics. And some will be stronger than others. And it will all depend on the life experience that you're in, on what your trigger is.
Okay.
If you're triggered and you think your fear of abandonment is triggered, you're going to become more anxious. You're going to be more clingy. If somebody is smothering you and taking your autonomy and freedom away as a fearful avoidant, you're going to go the other way. You're going to be like, I can't handle you. You need to deal with yourself. Hmm. So it's that hot, cold.
Right.
I love you. Get away from me. So integrated attachment theory. Mm-hmm. It is the pairing of the subconscious mind and John Bowlby's attachment theory work. Mm-hmm. So what's integrated is Thais Gibson put together this plan, and she is pairing like cognitive behavioral therapy, dialectical behavioral therapy, emotional processing tools, somatic processing. All of these things are integrated into this one system. That's what the integrated attachment theory is about. And it all works off the characteristics of everybody's individual attachment style. When you're going through coaching and how you move from an insecure attachment style to a more secure attachment style, you have to address the core wounds and belief mm-hmm. patterns, the relationship needs and expectations, the emotional patterns they're experiencing according to their attachment style, the boundaries and relationships to boundaries, communication patterns, and behavioral coping mechanisms. So what we do, we isolate and reprogram core wounds and fears. We assist in understanding and communicating a person's individual personality needs and what their expectations are mm-hmm. for themselves and to get from others. We assist in the tools for the emotional patterning, sharing and creating strategies for healthier coping mechanisms and boundaries. And actually, the interesting thing about coping mechanisms and boundaries all relate back to your needs, a person's mm-hmm. personality needs.
Right.
If you don't know who you are, how in the world do you know where you're going? Supporting healthier forms of communication. So now that you know who you are, basically, how are you going to communicate that? How are you going to stand up for yourself? The anxious preoccupied attachment style is formed from a measure with your guardians or your parents with a level of inconsistency and real or perceived abandonment. People ask, obviously real abandonment where maybe a parent, they got divorced and they left and somebody was actually abandoned, that's real. There's a disconnect there. And so kids naturally are narcissistic in a way where they're like, that must be me. Mm-hmm. It can't possibly be my parents because they're supposed to literally make me survive. So we take it on ourselves as children because we don't have the whole emotional maturity to look at somebody else and say, oh, mom's having a really bad day.
Yeah.
Or no wonder dad left, you know, he had all this trauma growing up as a kid. No 4-year-old knows that, right? So real or perceived being, maybe mom was a stay-at-home mom, but then at some point in your developing years, she had to take on a part-time job to help out, and suddenly she's gone. So that creates a disconnect. So a dismissive avoidant is born out of emotional neglect, direct or indirect, and neglect in general. So if your parents are providing for you, a lot of dismissives will say, I had a great childhood. What are you talking about? I had everything I wanted. I was able to play sports. I had clothes, food, shelter, all of these things. But then they're showing up at 60 years old and they don't have no idea how to relate in a relationship, and it's everyone else's fault. Show me the child from 0 to 7 and I will show you the adult, is the quote. Emotional neglect is simply, I don't see you for who you are. I'm not going to let you sit with that emotion. I will either make you repress that or punish you for it.
Sure.
And if you're angry, there's no room for that because me as the adult, I can't process that because I never have. So you don't get to feel it either.
Stop crying and be quiet.
Sit down and shut up when really you are loud and boisterous. So you can't be sad because I can't process that as an adult. Child, you need to grow up and you need to not be sad. You need to just go ahead and sit there and be stoic. And so that's actually one of the characteristics of a dismissive is stoicism. Fearful avoidant, like I said, takes on characteristics of both. And they come from a house of chaos, trauma, and abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse. A lot of times addiction, like raging addictions, will be present in that. Like, for instance, my mom was a food addict. And when we're talking about addicts and addiction, it's not the substance, it's the behavioral patterns behind it. It's the emotional roller coaster that we all experience.
Right.
And as a child, because we don't have all of this developed, we're walking on eggshells, we're hypervigilant. We adopt these ways in order to survive.
Yeah.
So when we're viewing these insecure attachment styles, maybe the listeners or the readers online will look at that and say, oh my gosh, look at how messed up I am.
Yeah.
No. Congratulate all that stuff because it allowed you to survive this long.
Mm-hmm.
But see, throughout life, we're never given a choice of who we want to be if we're in these insecure households. And it's not on purpose. It's no one's fault. People don't have children with the idea that I'm going to have these kids and I'm going to royally mess them up. Right?
Right?
Nobody has that goal.
No.
But you just repeat what you know.
Right.
And then as children, we survive with this. Yep. And as adults, we don't know any different, so we repeat it.
Yep.
And sometimes our insecure attachment styles will morph into more dangerous ones. And sometimes we adopt coping mechanisms of addictions, be it sex, drugs, drinking, gambling, shopping.
Yeah.
Humans.
Yep.
What is a codependent? We're literally addicted to other people.
Yes.
So are all of these things bad? They're maladaptive coping mechanisms that speak to you don't have your personality needs being met.
Yep.
And you have no idea how to process your emotions in a healthy way.
Yep.
You just haven't found healthier strategies.
Yep.
So working out of these insecure attachment styles towards a secure attachment style.
Yes.
Just all requires to know who you are and to adopt different strategies that are actually going to be on the positive side and less negative. And having compassion for yourself in the journey.
That's true. So then as you were learning all of this, I assume then that you were doing the similar work.
Absolutely.
In your own life.
Absolutely.
And adopting this journey. Have you met other people doing the same thing? And what have they told you about their experiences or expectations?
So I've been in counseling and therapy for over 20 years from my first husband on. And I've found little tidbits of success, but overall it was really disheartening, including the latest ones we have. Not that they don't have good material, good thoughts, good intentions, but I find it woefully incomplete. I'm more of a holistic
sure
person. It's just, let's not look at sex addiction. Let's not look at alcoholism. Let's not look at these things. To me, in my mind, like how my mind works, it works in puzzles. And you need all of the pieces there in order to put those puzzles together.
Yeah.
And if you're only dealing with the coping mechanism, where people have gone to find relief, you're giving an aspirin for a headache without doing tests to see that there's an aneurysm. Drives me mad in the world of therapy right now. And yeah. I am not a licensed therapist. I'm a coach, okay?
Sure.
I don't know that I will ever want to be a licensed therapist. Mm. I'm going to continue to learn everything that licensed therapists know because it's all really good information.
Right.
It's good to know and understand where people are coming from, what they've experienced, hear other people's stories, and it's woefully incomplete. I just told my therapist the other day, I said, talk therapy for me doesn't work. It does not work. And here's why. So many times, yes, we want to ask probing questions so that people can actually delve into what they're going through in their own minds, go back in their history and actually process things. But I like having a starting point. That's why these attachment style sheets are so revelatory. It's, I am afraid of being abandoned. One of my core wounds is I will be betrayed. No wonder I push people away before they can. No wonder I'm always distrusting of other people.
Hmm.
That doesn't feel good to me as it's happening. I know that there's a disconnect there somewhere. And then we adopt coping mechanisms that aren't so great. That hurts your heart to know that this is what you've done to others. This is what you've done to your children. When your only goal was to be the best mom in the entire world.
Yeah. So how has this affected your parenting to learn some of these things?
I wouldn't say that it has been a 180 yet, because we still fall into those old patterns. And I would say that it has affected my parenting tremendously. Both of my girls are off on their own. My 17-year-old is graduating, going to be going off to school.
Mm-hmm.
Your first child is always the one that bears the brunt of everything, right? So I'm so sorry, my dear. I'm so sorry. I keep apologizing to her. And that's where it brings you to. It's just like, oh, I did this to you. I am so sorry. So I have people picture like the grossest dead body in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stinky and it's disgusting and it's slimy.
Yeah.
And I just kept throwing dead bodies at my kids. Like, here, take it, take it, take it.
Yeah.
And so I just recently told my oldest, I said, you know what? Here's some things that I've recognized that I did to you and I expect you to carry, and it was age inappropriate.
Yeah.
I need to take that back.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be carrying that. You need to give that back.
Yeah.
So if you want to hang on to that, you can, but just know that I'm here to take it back when you're ready. And so many times, like the fear of betrayal and the fear of being abandoned and the feeling of unsafe, that's a core wound of fearful avoidant.
Yeah.
I am unsafe. I just need to get bigger, badder, and tougher to make sure that I'm safe. So then when my daughter calls and I don't agree with a medical decision that she made,
mm-hmm.
and I'm fearful that XYZ is going to happen, I just let that fly. No, you need to hear this, because this is what you should be afraid of too. Rather than giving her liberty and autonomy of being like, have you considered this?
Mm-hmm.
Or here's my fear. Ask questions rather than make assertions. So it's changed completely. The codependent side of me has been put in the spotlight, and I'm working my way out of that.
Do they comment on the change that they're seeing?
They do. And they catch me and call me out now. They're comfortable calling me out now with, hey, mom, can you not make me feel guilty about XYZ? I'm like, oh, I meant it as a joke, and sarcasm is one of my coping mechanisms, so I'm so sorry. And yes, I will work on that. And thank you very much for being vulnerable and sharing that with me.
One thing I noticed for myself when I started to make changes was disbelief.
Yes.
That changes would be made and that they would be effective and successful, permanent, positive.
Yeah.
And I felt I deserved that because I had been hurtful and unkind. And what I thought to myself was, I'm going to let that go. And we're just going to take this where it is, and the results will speak for themselves.
Yes.
I know that was a challenge for me to keep going.
Yeah.
And the reason I think that's true is when you're working to make a change, you're looking for that reward. And the reward is life will be better. Mm-hmm. Right? You're looking forward to positive relationships. Mm-hmm. You want loving relationships. You don't want this toxicity anymore.
Right, right.
Right? And so if the people that you love most and that you're working towards having great relationships with come back with even more negative behavior, it yeah. makes it look like you're never going to get there.
I can look at it now as I'm not healthy enough to deal with that. I look forward to the point where I can take their abusive comments, take their suggestions,
yeah.
take their all of these things that are toxic behaviors. They legitimately are.
Yep.
I knew that I was not in a space to be able to process that because I was processing so much of my own. And so I knew that eventually I wanted to get to that point where I could accept that toxic people were in my life, but then I could also speak up for myself and get to work on me.
I recently listened to, I think it was a pastor. It was at church anyways, and it was one of the speakers speaking, and he said something interesting. He said, we all have close friends, and then we have an outer circle. He yes. said, not all of my family is close friends. Some
yes.
of them are in the outer circle. He said, some of my friends are in the inner circle, and
yes.
my near relatives are in the outer circle.
Yes.
And that can shift back mm-hmm. and forth depending on the fragility of a relationship.
Right.
And working.
And the other person's healing.
Their journey.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. I've been toxic to people just like you admit that you had.
Yep.
And why would those other people? Until I show up
yeah,
in a different way.
Yes.
And they can learn like levels of trust. So when I explain boundaries, I think of it like in banking terms. There's some people that I wouldn't even tell my name of the bank to. That I bank at. And there's other people that I would give my username and password to, and I would let them manage my funds. And all of that can shift depending on, can I trust you with this? I'm going to
yeah.
give you this much access. Oh, okay. You can move to the next level. But that's mine to decide. Traits that I had to work through that just slapped me in the face as a fearful avoidant was, one of our things, our core wounds is I will be betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We tend to give you, I'm going to give you all of my trust. Here, take my username and password. Do what you want to it.
Yep.
And then we're surprised when
you do what you want with it.
When you've just betrayed me and you walked away and you didn't carry the same morals and values that I did. Every single person works and projects their own morals, their own values, their own personality,
yeah.
their own everything on someone else without them earning it.
Mm-hmm.
Without accepting that, and this is the enmeshment part, right? Without accepting that somebody else is different than me,
yep.
I can still appreciate and value that, even though they're not like me.
Yes.
It's what's the rule of narcissism and codependency? I call it two sides of the same coin. They're both looking for validation from the outside in.
Yes.
Rather than dealing from the inside out.
Yes.
Okay. When I realize that, I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Where does my worth and value come from?
Mm-hmm.
It can't come from outside. This is where we work on core wounds. This is where we work on new boundaries. This is where we work on all of these things so that we can fill our own cups, understanding our own needs
right.
within the attachment theory. If we understand our personality needs, we can fill them ourselves so that when it, like, I have a personality need for helpfulness, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I was super surprised by that. And I've been helping people my whole entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But until you know who you are, how do you know where you're going, right?
Right.
If I fill my own need, if I can help myself emotionally,
mm-hmm.
mentally, in the seven areas of life, my career, financially, if I can fill my own cup, it's not a desperate need to get helpfulness from the outside of me, like demanding it from someone else and then mm-hmm. being rejected and shamed and betrayed when it doesn't come from the outside in.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm filling my own cup and it comes, someone comes alongside and helps me in certain areas, it feels nice.
Right.
Rather than desperate. That's where working on needs work really speaks to our level of anxiety, our emotional processing, all of these things. Understand who you are so you can move forward.
Now, I'm curious, in all of this and in your church upbringing and mm-hmm. all of that, did you have a time at which the two came back together and you had a better understanding of your identity with God and with Jesus, and that became less of an uncomfortable, unsettled feeling and more authentic?
I always had a close relationship with God,
mm-hmm.
and I have always appreciated the trials and tribulations in life because it always pushed me to God and to Christ and to the Bible. So that was my escape. That's where I felt good about myself, because I at least I knew, and spirituality is actually one of the seven areas of life that we need to fill. I felt good that I was filling that bucket, that need, and I also, that was like the biggest betrayal to myself when I didn't act in a moral and valued way.
Right.
So the disconnect was both heartbreaking, and I knew there was a disconnect in myself. There was a disconnect with others because I'd treat different people certain ways. I would act more righteously. No, this is how you should be. Just ask me. Meanwhile, I'm over here living this duplicitous life.
Sure.
And guess who knows? God does. So all that while, I'm so grateful for the conviction in my heart where he just kept saying, hey, guess what? You know better, but let me lead you on this path. So I don't, like, I live my entire life without regret. I don't regret one single moment, one single choice, one single anything, because it's led me here. I often say, if you regret anything, you haven't learned what you're supposed to learn in life.
Right.
You haven't sat with yourself and you haven't sat with the Lord long enough for him to reveal what's missing, what you're supposed to learn. And with that attitude, as I'm going through trials and tribulations, I can sit there in that despair. It does hurt. I accept it. Mm-hmm. I don't try to push past it anymore, being like, no, let's go tougher. Let's go be distracted. Let's stay busy. Let's do all of these distraction coping mechanisms. Now I sit with it. Mm-hmm. And I pray to the Lord, like, I give up. Lord, this is yours. You are capable. I am not.
Mm-hmm.
Show me what I need to know. Lead me in the direction you need to be. Mm. Use me for good. And on the other side of that, I always know that there's a silver lining.
Mm-hmm.
What my true emotions are. Emotions are a gift from God. It allows us to relate to others.
Mm-hmm.
If you're sad, I can know what it feels like to be sad.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Jesus was with Lazarus.
Yes.
He was sad.
Yeah.
He grieved with him. He understands us.
Okay. I think one thing that I really learned as I had some personal growth was, and in my coping, how to live with being uncomfortable.
Yes.
And not escaping being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that it's okay to not be okay.
Yes.
And that was, it's not fun, but it's a great way to experience growth. And the reason I want to talk about that a little bit is I think a lot of the addictions and poor coping mechanisms people engage in is they're trying to escape discomfort.
Absolutely.
Either physical discomfort or emotional discomfort of any kind.
Absolutely.
And when we do that, in addition to engaging in poor coping mechanisms, we also suppress. It can lead to emotional numbing, and in the worst cases, emotional disconnect.
Right.
Even seeing the world as if you're watching a movie through your own eyes.
It is.
Right? Or as if you're watching someone else's life and you're not even in your own body.
Yep.
For me, I learned that my ankle and my foot would give away that I was tense, right? I would shake my foot or flex my foot. And I didn't know that, because who stares at their foot?
Who does that? Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if my ankle was sore, then I had been flexing my foot all day. And in fact, there was times in my life when I was so tense that I had created a hole in the top of my tennis shoe from flexing my foot and my toe so bad that I had torn my shoe. And so, not a very good shoe.
No, right.
But anyways, so then what I chose to do was think back through that day.
Yes.
And sometimes I had so repressed the negativity of that day seemed like a normal day to me.
Yeah.
And I would have to really think about the last 3 days. But intentionally doing that, then I began to feel. I used a wheel like this to take it from I must be angry. Was I let down today? Was I aggressive, frustrated today? And then taking it to the furthest part of the wheel. Was I provoked today?
Yes.
Was I skeptical today? So can you tell us a little bit about how we can use it to get a benefit other than identifying
emotions. So part of the emotional processing tool, which we can post online for anybody that wants to go through that exercise, it's very laid out. It's very self-explanatory. It's for the individual to work through line by line. I think there's 5 or 6 questions.
Yes.
But the emotional processing tool allows you to be like, okay, I'm angry. But then it comes down to a question of, what am I making it believe? Or what am I believing about the situation? What were my thoughts about it? And then what do I need to feel not angry? Mm-hmm. So in order to go over, if you identify that you're angry, because like I said, if you're in the middle of these things, oh, I'm so angry, you've skipped past 57 other emotions to get there. Because anger, happiness, surprise, sad, these are all emotions that society accepts as, okay, we don't need an explanation for why you feel this way. Okay, fine, you're angry, whatever, get over it. We as a society push these things away.
Yeah.
But we don't recognize the measures that took us there. So are you angry? Do you need to feel content about a decision? Are you angry because of a decision? Mm-hmm. Can someone else help you with that? Or is that something you can do for yourself?
Right.
And then what do you need to be joyful and free about? Figure out what you're dealing with. Figure out what beliefs you're working with. Go to that attachment style sheet and be like, okay, these are potential core wounds. Can I feel joyful and free if somebody doesn't betray me? Mm-hmm. Can I feel that way if I don't betray myself?
Yeah.
Because that's where it all starts, is with you. Starts with you, and then it projects out in the world. And then we're surprised when other people treat us the same way we've been treating ourselves.
So this wheel is a handy way for people, even wherever they are at throughout the day, to check in with themselves.
Yes.
And identify how they're feeling, and maybe even take steps to rectify it.
And so many times we can identify angry or sad, but emotions are nothing more than a sensation in your body that goes up to a belief or thought. Okay. to undemonize emotions, this is what we need to do. We just need to make them a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're a problem. There's got to be a solution to it. Understanding they're just a sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you feel fear? I feel fear in my chest, and it feels like a numb, tingly thing. Describe it. Take the teeth out of it.
Yep.
Being like, oh, okay. What am I fearful about? Oh, I'm afraid that my boss is going to come and fire me, and then what are you afraid is going to happen after that?
Yeah.
That I'll be unsafe, and I won't be safe and secure, and I'll lose my house, and I'll lose my kids. Use that, and then retell the story. Mm. Is it really true that my boss called a meeting at 1 o'clock because he's going to fire me? Or could it be because he's asking me about the presentation? Both can be true, but what is more true? Let's tell a couple different stories of what it could be to bring ourselves down and deal with the problem in the moment rather than catastrophizing.
I am going to wrap this up, but I have one final question. If someone wanted to learn more or even find a coach to help them through with some of these things, then I will put your information up in there as a resource, how would they go about learning more or finding a coach or getting in contact with you?
Contact me directly. I can refer out. Thais Gibson has all kinds of attachment theory stuff on the YouTube. Personal Development School is where it's under. More specifically, I have learned from a bunch of different people. And if I know somebody that can help, I will certainly lead them in that direction. Nobody is a fit for everybody. And if I can help somebody, I sure will.
Okay, that sounds great. And I want to end with, we have talked a lot about emotional coping mechanisms that are not necessarily healthy and all of the ways that the human spirit can go wrong. And that's a challenge for every person on earth. Nobody's born perfect. We are all born with a struggle. And we've talked a little bit about how even if we're raised in the church, it doesn't mean that we're automatically going to be perfect, and no parent is perfect.
Yes.
Even parents are born sinners.
Right.
But that's not a reflection on God.
Right.
God himself is perfect, and Jesus is the great physician.
Yes, he is.
Right. And that includes being able to heal all of these things. And so personally, in my own experience, like yourself, I had decades of therapy, which was very helpful, but Jesus was the one who provided the ability to understand
Yes.
He is the only one that can completely fill our needs. I think that we have these longings, these needs that can never be filled in any other way than through him. C.S. Lewis said that because these needs can never be fulfilled by another person, it tells me I was made for another place.
Amen.
And that I was made for someone who can.
Yeah.
And God is that person. And so I want to make sure that in everything that we're talking about, that we're pointing everyone who's listening to the person who can provide the ability to understand these important materials, which are important, because one person we all want to be securely attached to is God, is Jesus, and have that good relationship. And then he gives us the ability to have secure relationships with everyone else. That's why we're here.
Absolutely.
He said the first and most important commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. That's what he wants, is relationship with us. And he said, and the second commandment is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself.
Right.
It's all about relationship, and he wants to affect that.
Right.
So I encourage you and me and everyone listening to use these tools, these very wonderful tools, to help ourselves and each other to do that very well. So I want to thank you so much for being here and providing these.
Look for more episodes that inspire at hollybot.me. Until next time, remember, your story is never over. God's grace is always waiting to rewrite it. This is From Surviving to Living.